This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The Bust Fundraiser at the historic El Dorado Ballroom on January 19th. Money raised will help the musicians travel to Memphis for the International Blues Challenge. So please join us for a day of great blues music, food, drink, and camaraderie with other blues music enthusiasts. Admission is free with a new or renewing membership to the Houston Blues Society. Doors will open at 1 p.m. with music from 2 till 5. The El Dorado Ballroom is at 2310 Elgin in Houston's historic Third Ward, the home of the blues. For more information, log on to HoustonBluesSociety.org. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio.
Please note this location is inaccessible to those with mobility disabilities.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And Jack is not here this evening for some reason.
Well, not so far, but maybe he'll show up.
But we will go on without him. The show must go on.
The troopers that we are.
That's right.
So this is the January 14th edition of Queer Voices. I'm Deborah Bell.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And?
Brian, somebody.
Brian Levinka.
Brian.
There you go.
He's new to this. So.
Well, I had to turn on the kangaroo mic, so.
I see.
Okay.
So, upcoming on tonight's show, we'll have astrologer Lily Roddy.
Hey, you're doing my job.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Okay,
go, Glenn.
All right. Tonight, wouldn't you like to know the future? Well, so would we, and that's why Lily Roddy is here to give us her astrology forecast for 2008. Jeff Reed is our political beat reporter. He'll be here in the second hour to beat on the politicians. The polls love their polls, and I'm sure that Jeff will have something to say about the latest round of wrong results polling. And later in the show, we'll have the sister herself from Stage's production of Sisters Late Night Catholicism 2. And we have features from This Way Out, starting with News Wrap, and that's next.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 12, 2008. A Moscow judge this week acquitted 13 gay activists arrested last month for staging a protest outside a polling station during national elections. Moscow court judge Larisa Bogdanovich ruled that police had overreacted. Two officers testified that they were only following the orders of higher-ups in making the arrests. Bogdanovich's ruling noted that the 13 defendants did not have any agitation materials with them, such as posters or placards, and therefore were engaging in legally allowed picketing. It was the first ever courtroom victory by activists in their ongoing battle with Moscow authorities over the legality of holding peaceful public LGBT events. The group was protesting Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party, which has refused to advance LGBT rights in Russia. They also wanted to demonstrate against Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov, also of the United Russia Party, who was expected at the polling station. Lushkov bans pride marches in his city and has called such events satanic. A libel suit filed by queer activists against Lushkov was rejected by another court earlier this year, but they have a lawsuit pending at the European Court of Human Rights challenging the Pride March bans. Some European nations bless single-sex marriages and introduce sexual guides in schools, Lushkov said during a speech broadcast on Moscow television. Such things are a deadly moral poison for children. One of the Election Day demonstrators, Moscow Pride organizer Nikolay Alexeyev, wrote on his ballot, "No to homophobes, no to Lushkov," and held it up for news cameras. Analysts believe that Lushkov would not repeatedly issue anti-queer statements without the tacit approval of the Putin government. Their United Russia Party won the parliamentary elections in early December by an overwhelming margin, although critics charged that some of the voting was rigged.
The new year also brought the first openly gay lawmaker to the U.S. Pacific Island Territory of Guam. Benjamin Cruz won a special election for a Senate seat by 41% of the vote, enough to defeat a fellow Democrat and a Republican candidate. Cruz was an elected judge prior to his Senate victory. According to the Pacific News Center, he wants to focus his legislative work on the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse.
But Bertrand Delanoy, the openly gay socialist mayor of Paris, is getting increased police protection after the CIA informed their French counterparts that he was specifically targeted on a website used by Al-Qaeda members. A Paris police official was quick to tell reporters, however, that the threats are not specific and do not come from a site linked directly to Al-Qaeda. As mayor of France's biggest city, Delanoy is the most prominent gay politician in the country. He may have been targeted because security around recently elected President Nicolas Sarkozy, who supports the U.S.-led war in Iraq, is more difficult to penetrate. "I am calm," the mayor said during a television interview. "I have complete confidence in the work of police headquarters vis-a-vis security problems in general and terrorism in particular." The popular Delanoy, who came out during a television interview in 1998 when he was a city councilor, is expected to win a second seven-year term as mayor in March. He's also viewed as a potential 2012 presidential candidate for the Socialists. Despite his party's defeat to the conservative Sarkozy in last year's parliamentary elections, the Socialists made significant gains in Paris, winning 13 out of 21 districts.
Sexually active gay men in Canada are no longer able to donate their organs to the country's transplant programs. The new Health Canada regulation, which took effect in December, excludes injection drug users and any man who had sex with men within the last 5 years of his life. In the past, transplant programs have screened potential donors and, in some cases, based on medical suitability, have used organs from individuals identified as being from so-called high-risk groups. The new regulation prohibits that practice. Many health officials across the country were reportedly unaware of the new restrictions. Gary Levy, head of Toronto University's transplant program, told reporters that the new regulation will mean that 7 out of every 100 potential donors will be excluded, even though approximately 4,000 Canadians are on organ transplant waiting lists. Stressing that behavior is the key factor, not sexual orientation, he said that the gay community was singled out. "I think that's unfortunate."
Several countries also ban blood donations by gay men. According to a recent report by the CanWest News Service, the Canadian Federation of Students has been stepping up its opposition to their country's ban on those donations by any man who's had sex with another man, even once, since 1977. Federation spokeswoman Amanda Aziz said the ban on gay men donating blood is outdated and called it a form of institutionalized discrimination. The report said that opposition to the ban has provoked renewed organizing at the University of Toronto and McGill University in particular. A spokeswoman for Health Canada called the policy science-based and said that gay men are not the only targeted individuals. People who visited the United Kingdom or France between 1980 and 1996, for example, are also banned from donating blood because they may have a type of mad cow disease. But modern-day HIV testing can accurately detect infection within days of exposure. The Canadian Blood Service said it is continuing to study the issue.
In other news, a church in the U.S. state of Michigan has been denied property insurance coverage because of its national governing body's support for LGBT rights. According to a story in the Wall Street Journal, the West Adrian United Church of Christ was rejected by Brotherhood Mutual Insurance Company of Fort Wayne, Indiana, because of its denomination's support for same-gender marriage and the ordination of lesbi-gay clergy. A regional underwriter for Brotherhood Mutual, one of America's largest insurers of religious institutions, wrote in a letter to the church that such support has resulted in property damage and the potential for increased litigation among churches that have chosen to publicly endorse these positions. But the church's pastor, the Reverend John Kotke, told the Journal that he knows of no act of violence or threats against his church located in southeastern Michigan between Ann Arbor and Toledo, Ohio, or its congregation of fewer than 200 members. The United Church of Christ is known for its history of social activism. It ordained its first openly gay pastor in 1972 and affirmed support for same-gender marriage with a resolution at the General Synod, its governing body, in 2005. The Reverend J. Bennett Guess, communications director for the United Church of Christ, told reporters that as far as he knew, This is the first time one of our churches has been denied an insurance quote because of our denomination's affirmation of gay and lesbian people. U.S. insurers can generally set their own underwriting criteria as long as they don't violate state or federal anti-discrimination laws.
Lawmakers in New Jersey this week passed legislation to strengthen the state's hate crimes and anti-school bullying laws. The bill won widespread bipartisan support in the Assembly and Senate and now goes to Governor John Corzine for his expected signature. The legislation has two key components. The first adds gender identity or expression to existing state hate crime laws, which already cover sexuality, race, and religion. It also requires 2 hours of training on hate crimes for all new police officers and offers sentencing enhancements to judges, such as anti-hate sensitivity training for convicted defendants. The second part cracks down on bullying in schools, making it mandatory for schools to post on their websites and widely distribute their anti-bullying policies. It also creates a commission on bullying in schools. In addition to lobbying by queer advocacy groups, the bill was supported by the New Jersey Anti-Defamation League, the New Jersey Educational Association, and the State Attorney General's Office. Last year's FBI report on hate crimes ranked New Jersey second in the country, behind only California. Legislation to add sexual orientation and gender identity to specified groups in federal hate crimes laws has stalled in Congress.
And finally, the U.S. Supreme Court this week refused to hear a challenge to the trademarking of the name used by one of San Francisco's most venerable groups, Dykes on Bikes. Attorney Michael McDermott claimed in his lawsuit that the name is scandalous and immoral, grounds for the denial of a trademark, and that the very word dyke is synonymous with a deep, obsessive hatred of men and the male gender. Last year, he sought an injunction at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, which regularly hears copyright and trademark cases, to prohibit the group's use of the name. In a unanimous 3-judge ruling, the court said that as a man, McDermott had no legal right to be offended. McDermott then appealed to the Supreme Court. The justice's refusal to hear the case means the appellate ruling stands. The motorcycle riding Dykes on Bikes, which traditionally leads off the city's queer pride parade, has been a fixture in San Francisco's LGBT community for more than 30 years and has counterparts in several other cities. The trademark office had twice rejected the group's application on the grounds that the word dyke is disparaging to lesbians. The group appealed to the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board in December 2005, and with the help of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, submitted more than 24 expert declarations from scholars, linguists, psychologists, and activists demonstrating how the word dyke has evolved to become an empowering and positive term for lesbians, and the board ruled in their favor. Now that Dykes on Bikes has cleared its final legal hurdle, the word dyke has for the first time been registered as part of a U.S. trademark.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 12, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
This is Queer Voices.
Jeans, this will show for sure. kiss may be grand, but it won't fix the plumbing in your humble flat. Or help us call a second bath. Boys get weird as girls appear with their tool belts and drills in their hands. Cordless screwdrivers, jigsaws and miners, power tools, power tools. Power tools are a girl's best friend.
So my brother says God is a flat-butted, crew-cutted linebacker, a macho babe hijacker, panting at the line of scrimmage. He makes God in his own image, and I don't begrudge him that. But his is a God who hates all fads, Jews, Hindus, and kids in rags. The Bible can thump like a big bass drum, till every single sacred cow comes home, I know where that's at. God is why. God is why. God is why. You can't get around to the other side. You can't have a runaway. Shock can't hide. So my brother says, say what you will, and I don't really care what you do. It's your life and it's up to you. And then he blinks his eye, which is true sky blue. Puts his arm around his daughter, turns to me the two. Jumps and cheers when his team rocks. Then there's the God with open arms. He's the God of the family farms. Inhabits the fields and the flowers and the barns. Smiles when the missus darns her husband's socks. God is wise. God is wise. God is wise. Can't get around to the other side. You can't know the way. Shock can't hide. So my brother says, you know that I don't like to fight, but I think I know what's wrong for what's right. Whatever some people may do or say, you can't tell me it's okay. It ain't no way to be. And there's the God who lives in every tree. She's the one who created me. Easter waking up the spring. I'm not sure to whom I should sing or from whom I should flee. God is why. God is why. God is why. You can't get around to the other side. You can't outrun them and you sure can't hide. Brother, he jumps into the shiny car, though he never seems to drive too far. To the PTA, to the voting booth, to get a film for his sweet tooth. He drives to the mall. Well, there's a God of me and a God of light, a God who brights in this frightening night, a God who's gonna make all things right. Awesome power and might, this be the true God after all. God is why. God is God is why. You can't get around to the other side. You can't overrun them and you sure can't hide. God is why. God is why. God is why. You can't get around to the other side. You can't overrun. Sure can't hide. So my brother said.
David Hall from his album True, and the title of that song is God is Wide. I know some of you may think that he was saying God is white, but no, it's God is Wide. And before that, Ann Reed, Power Tools, from her album Timing is Everything from 1997. This is Queer Voices.
I actually thought it was saying God is wise.
That's what I thought.
I thought wise.
And I thought I was trying to find a way to segue, but we are talking about the vastness of God.
Right. It could be wide
your
load.
Your concept of, for us it would be a wide load.
Like hauling down the road with a wide load, God.
The concept of the wideness of the universe and what we each as individuals, unique in the universe, share our humanity. To me, that's what God is about. It's the holiness within ourselves and in others. And
what a perfect segue into the stars.
Well, here is someone who is wise, and that's the lovely Lily Roddy, who is best known among the listeners of our
show.
We're
not going to talk about that. Let's talk about astrology.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Jennifer is just on a roll tonight, y'all. Lily is the astrologer that writes for Outsmart magazine, as well as does private consultations and some other things. And people always say, I love Lily because whatever she writes is so on target. And I always found that so, because I'd usually read it like a month afterwards, and I'd like, how did she know what happened in my life? Well, and Lily, just to start off a little bit, let's have an overview of the year. I'm fascinated because I am a Capricorn, and it says here that there's something is happening that has not happened since 1762.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
so. We'll
right.
get to that when we go into Capricorn. But
that you have a date?
That was going to be my line. I'm going to have a drink this year.
Oh, I feel the love again. Okay. And by the way, happy birthday to Mr. Valensky, who had a birthday last Friday. And happy birthday to me, who has a birthday.
On Wednesday the 16th. Happy birthday.
Jennifer. That's okay.
Okay.
So, Lily, let's start off with kind of an overview of what's in the stars for the year 2008, which the best thing about it is that it is 2008 and no longer 2007.
Well, one thing is that this year, 2008 overall, is just going to be a better year energetically for everything, because for the last, the last 2 years, they've really been bad, but 2007 was especially, I thought it was especially bad. And that seemed to be reflective in the clients that I dealt with. And, of course, some signs will be having more difficulty than others. But for those signs that are earth signs, Taurus, Capricorns, and Virgos, generally are actually in a much better place than they've been in just many years. And so we can certainly expect
very much about time.
That's right. It's past time.
What about air signs?
Well, wait a minute. We'll get to those airheads.
Hey, we're talking to you. You started out with you, and I don't.
Well, I want to go a little bit back to this, a thing about Pluto in Capricorn, because the last time this happened was during the American Revolution. And one of the things that you say is that it will affect us individually, but it's going to have a greater impact on nations and society as a whole and on government. And what could be more exciting for us right now in this election year?
Exactly. Well, one of the phrases I use for Pluto is the cosmic enema. So as she makes her way...
I feel so much better.
As she makes her way through Pluto in Capricorn, it's going to really change a lot of the core structure of our government. It'll have to do with a lot of our highways, our road systems. And generally what we're going to find is probably there's kind of a deconstruction process actually that'll be occurring within the government, because the last time that Pluto was essentially the U.S.'s chart where, you know, July 4th, 1776. And what we're going to be doing as a country is called Pluto Return, which is essentially Pluto coming back to the place in the chart where it was when we were, our country was started. And if you'll think back to that time much prior to, just a little bit prior to the actual July 4th, 1776, that's when we really, that's when the roots of the American Revolution began. And I expect to see people sort of stepping up and demanding a higher level of integrity from people than we've expected in the past. Excuse me. So I know that those things, I know that those things are going to go on, and they're going to go on a pretty large scale. I want to say, as I did a lecture that is on my website that you can actually download if you want to listen to. It's
what's that website? What is your website?
www.lilyroddy.com.
Okay.
How clever.
How clever. I know. Just.
Well, this does say that there will be a great impact on Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. Now, you're a Libra, right, Jennifer?
Yes, I am.
So that answers part of that question.
And I want to say is particularly those people, particularly those four signs, particularly people who are born in the very first 2 to 3 days of those signs, are the ones that are going to be most impacted in 08. Over the next 14 years, everyone, all of those people will be affected.
I was in the first third.
And I'm
a
smack dab in the middle of January.
Right, so you've both got a little bit of ways to go, but you'll probably start to sense that there are things about your identity and about yourself you really want to let go of and you don't want to hold on to. And it's also a time of, if I can borrow a term from the 90s, it's a time of personal empowerment where really you're supposed to step up and be more of yourself and not let your fears, you know, unconsciously drive
right.
you.
Yeah, if I don't stop eating, there's going to be more of me to hold on to.
With the sisters
God
are
is
doing
wide.
It for themselves because God is wide.
I'll be a wide load.
And this is something we always hear so much about, and that's the Mercury. Well, and of course, Pluto's the planet that's not a planet anymore.
Well, astrologically, we used lots of different bodies that were not planets, and so we don't really care what they want to call it, and you know
it
they
still
can,
has an effect.
Exactly, it's still affecting us, and if they would like to, you know, I mean, we use Ceres and Pallas Athena and nodes and all kinds of things that you know other people aren't going to particularly recognize anyway.
I see, and so if you don't know where the planets are in your sign, this it would be a good time to get your chart done.
Would certainly be that, and if you don't want to come for a reading, you can actually go online to astrolabe.com and generate a chart with a little bit of interpretation and see where that is. So you can actually, there's a lot of places online you can get a copy of your chart so that you get a larger picture beyond just what your sun sign is. And particularly if you know a little bit of astrology and you know the sign your moon is in or you know the sign your rising sign, you actually should read all three of those signs to get a more complete picture of your horoscope for this year.
So I'm a double Capricorn with the Aquarius rising. My Aquarius rising saves me from being a triple Capricorn.
That sounds like something I'd order at Starbucks.
Which would be a dreadful thing. Okay, so we always hear about Mercury going retrograde.
We do.
So what? And that will be happening this year, January 24th through February 22nd, May 22nd through June 22nd, and then finally September 19th through October 19th. So what happens when Mercury goes retrograde?
It's clearly just a time where we're supposed to pay more attention to our past, go back and take care of things that need to be finished, clean things up. It's just not the time to move forward. So a lot of times people ask me, can I do this? Should I do this? For example, you know, if your high school reunion falls during a Mercury retrograde, it's the perfect time to go. You know, but if you're going to take a trip somewhere where you've never been before, it's probably that your expectations should be very realistic. Your plans will probably not go like you planned. It's best not to take a new job or work with new people, but if you go back to work for someone that you've worked for before during a Mercury retrograde, those things are good.
Now, aren't there like communication issues when Mercury is retrograde?
Yes, there are.
Funky stuff to like phones and computers and
It always shows up where the problems are in communication, and that's the process. That's the purpose of Mercury retrograde. So, yes, it's usually probably an issue that's always been there, but because, and I guess I'll just speak about myself here, because I'd rather avoid actually fixing something, you know, and so Mercury retrograde occurs, and then, you know, my mic quits working, and then I can't speak at all, and then I have to go finally do something about it.
And then how do eclipses affect us?
Well, eclipses affect us sort of depending on the particular signs that they fall in. Generally, it would be the eclipse cycle is going to be in the Leo Aquarius range. And so that means that Leo, Aquarius, Scorpio, and Taurus are probably the signs that are going to be the most affected. And an eclipse is a specialized new and full moon. So what it does is it tends to heighten people's emotionality and tends to create a level of either emotional change. It can make you deal with old family issues. It can make you move. It can do all kinds of different things, but it brings the light to situations.
And it says here, it's usually a time of decision-making that starts us on a personal cycle that can last us as long as 18 years.
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right.
Until I'm dead, apparently. It'll be.
That's definitely scary.
Well, the eclipse cycle is one that repeats every 18 years. So.
Oh, okay.
So that's what happens is whatever cycle we start under that, usually we're sort of driven by that motivation, but normally we're humans, we forget why we started.
And with Mars, the planet of action and reaction, it's in a retrograde cycle, which it finishes on February 5th, and that means that things are slow as the year begins until after February 23rd. So despite our best intentions, Jennifer,
yes,
such about dieting, we won't be acting on our New Year's resolutions so much until late February.
That's right. We should have March resolutions.
I have an internist that won't like me telling him that. I'm in retrograde.
We'll just go slowly towards that, and then you can get real into it later. And so you're saying that it's not so harsh as it has been in the last couple of years, that we're kind of in for a better time. We're ready to clean out our government as people want to move back to the time when we had stateswomen and men. Thank you for wording it that way.
You're so welcome.
And real leaders who lead by example.
Because one of the things we had been discussing in one of my classes was the loss of heroes, is that there really is no one we can sort of say, look at that person. Even people we would like to look at and sort of place in a more exemplary role, we're having a hard time finding that.
Okay, now everybody wants to know about their personal sun sign. And most of us, whether we really believe in astrology or not, we can't help but be curious. And we turn to that page. It's usually in the Chronicle. It's in with where the comics are. On Yahoo, we have our thing comes up. I mean, I have that. I have my Capricorn and my Aquarius, since I'm Aquarius ascending. And it often provides food for thought. And so we'll just go through the signs, and Lily likes to do it as the astrological chart is set up, which begins in Aries in the springtime, March 21st. Through April the 19th.
Okay, well, let's start with Aries. So let's just say that all the Aries that are born in the first 3 days of the sign, you're dealing with Pluto, and Pluto is moving through your career sector. So this can be a gigantic shift for a lot of Aries people around their lives, the decisions they've made about their career. For some of them, this may be a time of retirement. And for others, this may be a time where the company that you work for downsizes and sort of forces you out on your own. So so those people born in the early part of that sign should be really prepared. All Aries, however, including those in the first 3 days, will really be dealing with a lot of work and health issues this year. And so they can be prepared that there's a big reorganizational process at work, making things more effective, replacing equipment that isn't working, and generally sort of making the whole workplace more efficient than ever before. And a lot of this also has to, it's a good time for Aries to actually work on a diet, exercise, health plan, not just to lose weight, but necessarily to make their whole lives much better. So this is actually a really good time for Aries to pay attention to that, and there's a lot of motivation.
Ooh, and certainly, probably for all of us, we should be doing that.
And certainly even in the work scenario that they'll be not getting along with their coworkers as easily, and probably not wanting to, I know this will sound strange to say this about Aries, but not wanting to be in charge as much, not want to have to give orders, but actually wanting to sort of take a more of a backseat position and expect other people to do their work without them having to goad them.
Okay. And how about in the romantic sector?
The romantic sector for Aries is pretty good. There's a lot of sort of there's a lot of sort of personal change in their own lives, and so I would say probably there's sort of more focus on making their day-to-day activity better. And in that sense, what that does for relationships, it makes people sort of more critical of their partner, and again, sort of wanting to make their lives run better. And that's a larger theme for Aries that'll run all the way through. So it'll be more difficult to ignore the Aries people, the Aries partners, than they have in the past.
Okay, let's go to Taurus, which is April 20th through May 20th.
Yeah, okay. Now, I'm going to say generally for all, as I said earlier, for all Earth signs, and particularly for Taurus, this is a knockout year for Taurus. They should actually be out there doing as much as they can. The energy is so positive. The likelihood is that most anything that Tauruses will attempt this year will turn out in a lot more positive way than they have in the past. So anything that they want to do, career, relationships, friendship, making money, making investments, all these things are really going to be so much more positive for them, and actually fairly, very positive in 08, and actually, but also positive in 09 as well. So they're actually on a really good 2-year run for the Tauruses. Now, the Tauruses that are born May 11th through May 15th, those are the ones that are sort of dealing with some major career crisis and feeling sort of lost in their career, not feeling very connected. Now, those people are probably not having as much fun as the rest of the Tauruses, but there's still a lot of positive energy around those people that are dealing with their career difficulties. And so that can be better for them if they'll, you know, sort of work at it. And the same thing, it's a good year to for Tauruses to either, if you're in a relationship and you're a Taurus, you'll feel more optimistic and more open in your relationship. If you're single, this is a keen year to get out there and market yourself.
With
yeah.
a good
well, it's
Capricorn.
It's a good year to be a Taurus.
That's right. If you're a Taurus, it's a good year. And I've seen a lot of Tauruses lately.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have a new cat, and he's a Taurus. So.
I see. And,
transgender?
And it says you have to follow your feelings and not always what seems to make logical sense, which is a little contrary to a Taurus nature, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's that they have to respond more to their own, to their psychic sense or their intuition rather than just following the logic. And that way they'll actually feel more energized and feel better.
Okay, we have Gemini, the twins, which is May 21st through June 21st. And one of my sons is a Gemini. So
all right.
I'm always interested in what's with them.
Okay. For the Gemini, this year of focus is primarily in the home and in the family area. And part of that is that this is sort of a year for them to grow up and be more adult-like and sort of take on their own level of responsibility. Wouldn't be surprised to see more Geminis sort of stepping back and away from their family, sort of establishing their own family. On some level, you consider this a sort of a nesting period for Geminis. And in addition to that, just on a sort of a mundane level, if you're a Gemini, it's likely that you're going to want to make your house a better place, do some reconstruction, possibly move. All comes out of this. And in addition to this, there's also the sense that you're really wanting your own life to be a lot better from a career perspective. So it's actually pushing people to be a lot more dynamic the Geminis to make more decisions, because typically Gemini is a sign that sort of is able to waver between two places and ride both places, and that's part of the power of their adaptability. But this year they're expected to be more clear about their own directions, and I think that we're going to see a lot more Geminis sort of step up and accept their own individuality particularly during this whole year. And because of the maturity factor for relationships for Geminis, they'll want to take any relationship that they're in to the next level.
I may finally get to be a grandmother. If my son
takes it. It's not as big as it's cracked up to be, I assure you.
Okay. Well, and that brings us to...
Yeah, and those of you who are tuning in and wondering what we're doing, we're talking with Lily Roddy, and we're talking about the astrological future for 08. And, okay, next one is Cancer, June 22nd through July 22nd.
That's right, the best sign in the zodiac, the Cancers. And
what is that, your sign?
Oh, well, it just happens to be.
Okay.
I didn't plan it that
way. It's also during the time we have Pride Month.
That's right, and speaking of that, every year on my birthday, because my birthday falls just about the time Pride Month does, I'm always dancing in the middle of Westheimer at midnight for my own birthday. I think it's the best part of the whole Pride Parade. Look for me dancing on Westheimer.
We recommend that during Pride, not other times of the year.
That's right.
Oh, why not?
Okay, Cancers. For the Cancers that are born in the first 2 to 3 days of the sign, this is definitely a time frame where you're going to be dealing with major relationship crisis, potential endings, divorces, and really major upheaval here. So I would say, you know, get thyself to a therapist along with your partner as soon as possible.
Okay.
Because the likelihood is that this can be a very difficult time. And
we shouldn't laugh.
We shouldn't laugh at the poor Cancers. And but part of this is sort of a breaking away, you know, sort of removing your shell and stepping out and being a more of an independent person. And certainly this can be a time where relationships are renewed. Now, for the rest of the Cancers, this is a much more organized period than they have been. And really there's an enormous opportunity for lots of Cancers to step out, meet people. It's a much more, for the rest of the Cancers, not the first 3 days, the rest of the Cancers, it's a really great time for relationships, really good opportunities, great opportunities to market yourself in your work, in any kind of organization that you want to belong to, or any area that you're in. This is a really dynamic time for Cancers, and really a sort of getting their life organized and putting their best foot forward. Really, it's a keen time for Cancers as well.
Oh, go Cancer.
That's right. Yay for me.
And Leo, which is July 23rd to August 22nd, that's the Lion. Have a lot of good friends that are Leo. So what's with them?
Okay, well, Leos, for the most part, are really taking a big breath this year, because the last 2 years, Leos have really had a tough time. And this is your sort of recovery year. And the only areas that are really difficult, I would say probably those Leos that are born August 13th through the 18th, those of you will probably be having some relationship problems, not being able to be clear, or if you even have your partner be very clear. But I would say the rest of you are working really hard in getting your financial picture in order, really working on making sure that you're paid what you're worth, and directing yourself in a much more organized and clear manner than before, and not so self-critical. Last year was a very self-critical year for Leos. I can't say that this is a great time for relationships overall for Leos, but it's a better time because Leos are really much more sort of moving towards the future rather than in the past. And but there is a lot of change at work, particularly in the works arena, you know, where you work, and so it could be extra busy for Leos at work this year. And not that that's bad, but...
I think having work is good.
It's a very good thing.
Yes.
But it could be that Leos have a tendency to easily sort of want to be in charge and then step up, and then all of a sudden they're overloaded, so they're going to have to really watch that they don't overstep their boundaries this year.
Well, let's look at Virgo, which is August 23rd through September 22nd.
Okay. Virgos. Now, this year, and the planet Saturn has moved into Virgo, and Saturn will spend 2 1/3 years in the sign of Virgo, which it normally does. And it will have the greatest impact in the sense that what Saturn is all about is about the reevaluation of where people are in their life. Saturn wants you to clean up the things that don't work. My Saturn phrase I use always in my readings are, if it works, keep it. If it's broken, fix it. And if you can't fix it, throw it out and find something that'll work. That's Saturn's point of view. She's concerned about the future, best use of your personal resources. She's not really interested in things that don't work. She wants a clear plan. So this is not necessarily a negative time for Virgos, but this is really this is the year to get your act together. Excellent time for moving forward in career. And having a clear plan and not being undervalued or treated badly by other people at all. This can be somewhat difficult in relationships because it does represent a time when relationships are supposed to be renewed for Virgos, which may not always be so easy.
I think we should move on to Libra. I have a special interest here.
Okay, well,
Libra is a sign. I have so many association with Libras. It's just kind of very, very strange.
We're special
Libra
people.
Women.
We're special people.
Well, you are. Believe me, Libras are ever so special.
Ever so special.
But, I mean, I have had a number of partners that are Libra, a former mother-in-law, a husband's ex-wife that was a Libra. You know, it's like they're... And then the lovely Jennifer Renee, of course.
Yes, Libras. So, what's up for Libra this year?
I want to say is that the signs that are cardinal signs, which are Cancer, Aries, Libra, Capricorn, actually tend to be more attracted to each other because they all tend to be much more action-oriented, people that want to do something with their lives and are not afraid to sort of make a decision and not be so concerned about the outcome. So that's one element.
Even though it's earth and air.
It's earth and air, it's just, you know, one's practical and one, you know, sort of wants to be intellectual about it. So
earth,
you know,
and water makes mud, so, yeah, you know, I'd take earth and air.
Well, strangely
talk
enough.
Talk about it. Don't interrupt. I want to hear more.
Okay, so for the people that are born again in the first 3 days of the sign of Libra, is those people are going to be the ones that are going to be dealing with Pluto. And so this is going to be big shifts in your family, possible moving. If you're older, then we could see your parents retiring, things like that. I mean, if your parents aren't doing very well physically, sometimes this is the time of the year. This time would be when they leave the planet. So it's a pretty big deal. But it's also, a big time of change and letting go, again, of fears that sort of keep Libras being too nice. Now, this year, what Libras are going to be is a whole lot more out and outspoken than they have been in the past. And normally, Libras try to not step on people's toes. They try to always think of themselves as, you know, listening to other people's points of view and working with that because that's the way they think. And this year, they're definitely going to be much more direct and, in some ways, more confrontational than Libras are used to being. And part of that is that their internal belief system is being strengthened, and they're really putting their own ideas and their own beliefs on the line and acting on them. So I think that's a very different element for Libras. And in a sense, it's more about their own lives rather than what Libras are doing in terms of their relationship with other people. Not to say we can ignore that, because Libras deal with relationships all the time. So it's a much more sort of a time, I would say, for a Libras to sort of really get a hold of their own internal beliefs, when you call them spiritual beliefs, and really move forward.
Okay, we're going to continue on and take a little bit more time, because it's hard to get through all these signs.
Well, we only have a couple of more signs.
Yeah, well, we're about halfway through the zodiac.
Oh, really?
And we have Scorpio, which
as far as I cared.
It's October 24th through November 21st, so
What's with the Scorpios? So I was about to say, whenever I do this lecture, for about an hour and a half, and usually when people hear their sign, they leave in the middle of the lecture. It's like, well, I'm done, okay? So it's always good to know that narcissism is healthy and well in our society. Now, for Scorpios, I just want to pick on the ones that are born November the 12th through November the 17th. This is a time where you're going to feel very rootless, not bound or connected to your family, probably not real clear about your career direction, and really sort of wanting to be away, I'm trying to think of the right word here, on a sort of on a spiritual pilgrimage, trying to figure out what your life is really about. And that's what you're supposed to be doing, even though people may question what's wrong with you, because you're certainly not going to appear to be as stable and as in control as you have been in the past. We're going to see a lot more sort of emotional expression from the Scorpios overall. Now, for Scorpios, for the rest of the Scorpios, this is a time really to sort of reorganize your friends and those people that are particularly close to you, and to sort of decide whether or not you're going to keep those in your life. For the company that you're working for, this is a time where there's probably some financial problems there, and this is a time for your company, or if it's your own company, to address those and to get those things cleared up. In many ways, to sort of, not a really a major downsizing process, but to sort of make, to get rid of the areas that aren't working in the business. I mean, if you sell Christmas cards, you know, then it's going to be to get rid of the cards that don't sell and keep the ones that do. So for Scorpios, that's a real strong thing. And also there's an element of wanting all relationships to be stronger. So there's a sense that Scorpios want their personal relationships, their romantic partners, to be closer and to be more friendship-oriented than they have been in the past.
Okay. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st.
Okay. Those Sages that are born December 20th through the 21st, the very end of the sign, you're the people dealing with Pluto on your sun, and for you, this is your personal year of death and rebirth, and this is where you're really sort of cleaning out things, throwing things away, getting rid of things, and that can be people, that can be emotions, that can be, you know, boxes you've had in the attic for a very long time. The other side of this, for the majority of Sages, this is a big career year. This is really sort of your year to get your act together and to do something with your life. We can not be surprised to see either Sages change their career or to do something on their own or to step up and be a major player in the whatever business they're in. We should expect some parts of them to be getting promotions, raises. This is really sort of their time to step up and be sort of the boss in their own life.
What a concept.
Well, let's go to Capricorn.
Well, wait a minute. And romantically for Sagittarius?
I would say romantically this is not, there won't be a lot of focus on romance for Sag. For mostly this is much more about sort of where their life is headed. Now, if you're married and you're a Sag, then your partner and how well your partner's doing at work will be a big factor. But that's still really more about the career side of life, or we could say the security side of life rather than just so much about the romantic side. It's not really a big romantic year for Sagittarius.
Okay, well, of course, my favorite sign, Capricorn. And remember, Elvis is a Capricorn. December 22nd through January 19th, and from what I have perused here in Outsmart Magazine...
Yes, ma'am.
This is really looking good, Lily. Thank you ever so much.
You're so welcome. I'm so glad I could actually... If I was only in charge as opposed to just interpreting...
Like the weather forecaster that always gets blamed if it rains. So tell us what's in store for Capricorn.
Okay, well, for those Capricorns that are born in the very beginning of the sign, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, you're doing Pluto, so this is a really big life change, and you should consider changing and throwing out everything in your life during this whole year. You won't, but you will consider it. And again, being a lot more risk-oriented, really, things could happen unexpectedly. Pluto energy tends to represent things that are beyond your control. So sometimes that represents people's companies being bought up or merged, and because of that, that person's position or their sense of power or loyalty is sort of tested during that time. However, it's a really good time for for those people if they can address the power and not be afraid of it. Now, for all the rest of the Capricorns, this is really a keen year. And literally, when I would say this almost like I say this about the Tauruses, you should literally be out there knocking down the doors. You should be out there promoting yourself, working hard. Good things will happen if you do nothing. And if you add any kind of energy, the likelihood is things could be tremendously positive. Romance, business, money, all things are really actually good for Capricorns.
Well, this is Deborah Bell along with Jennifer Renee, and we're talking to Lily Roddy, who's an astrologer, and available at www.lilyroddy.com. And that's Lily with two L's?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and so we have 4 minutes for Aquarius and Pisces.
Okay.
And Aquarius, that's January 20th through February 18th.
Okay. This is a year in which the Aquarians really have to draw upon their own sense of their own value and to step up and again be more clear about what to promote themselves and not necessarily promote others. Aquarians are really good at promoting others, and at this time they're supposed to really promote themselves and for them to honor themselves, and that would be true in any area that we would look at, whether we're talking about romance or career, is that they're supposed to set some better boundaries and not tolerate as much from people just to be able to sort of get their love and respect. And that's a big deal. That's a very big deal for Aquarians. So it's a very in a sense, it forces them to be more open. Aquarians aren't always the most open of people. They probably might disagree with me, but that's what I would say. Now, let me switch to Pisces real quickly. The Piscean energy is specifically, this is sort of the time for most Pisces to really, again, organize their lives. This is a real, their focus is going to be in relationships, and this is a major time of revival and revision in their current relationships, particularly how they create them and how they structure them. So relationships that aren't working, again, this would be a great time to sort of visit with your counselor, you know, visit with someone who is a good umpire that's able to give you and your partner an outside perspective. This can also be a time where people really want to take their relationship again to some next level, expecting some greater level of commitment than they have in the past. So primarily, this is a big year about relationships for Pisces, but overall this is a much more organized and much more stable year for Pisces. They haven't really had a lot of stability really over the last, over the last 12 years. It's not been a real big stable time for them, and this is sort of the beginning of that stability for the Pisces.
Yeah. Is there anything, any events that you have or classes? I know that you have classes on astrology.
I do.
Tell us about it quickly.
Okay, I'm doing a beginning astrology class, and this is for people who don't know anything about astrology. And this is going to be on January 19th and 20th, which is next weekend, and that's Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m.
And people can get more information at the website.
They can do that, or they can email me at lilycath@aol.com.
And that's Lily, L-I-L-L-Y, Cath, C-A-T-H.
Exactly.
At
AOL.com. And so I'm doing that class, and for those that want to, I'm doing an astrology and tarot class, and that'll do on Wednesdays, and we'll start that next week as well. And if you have some astrology knowledge and want to sort of mix your information with tarot, I'm sort of doing a different class this year. I'll be doing that for 8 weeks.
Okay. And Lily Roddy's column appears in Outsmart magazine every month. And is there anything about this year that we didn't touch on that you think is a good thing that we need to let people know?
Who's going to win the election?
I have my favorites, but I will be honest and say I haven't looked at the charts. So I do not know, I don't look really till we get down to a reasonable number of candidates. But
it's going to be soon.
That's right, very soon. But I just want to emphasize that it's a really sort of a return to, I want to say, a traditional notion of values where integrity and honesty comes to the forefront, and I think that will be very different than what we've had in the last 8 years in our own government. And also is to say thanks for letting me come and do this every year, because it's so great to be with both of y'all.
Oh, thank you, Lily.
Thank you, Lily.
And you are listening to Queer Voices on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM and in Galveston at 89.5 FM.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices. with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
If you go down to the woods today, you're in for a big surprise. If you go down to the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every dyke that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the lesbians have their pick.
Happy lesbians.
Every lesbian who's been good is sure of a treat today. There's lots of marvelous things to eat and wonderful games to play. Beneath the trees where nobody sees, they'll hide and seek as long as they please, cause that's the way the lesbians have their picnic.
La 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 la.
If you go down to the woods today, you better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home. For every dyke that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the lesbians have their picnic.
Picnic time for lesbians.
What fun the lusty lesbians are having, a lovely time today. Watch them run and play.
Watch them
catch them on a way. Surprise and see the picnic on their holiday.
Today is a special day.
See them gaily get about and rock. They love to play and shout. They never have any cares. The lesbians are like at 6 o'clock. Their friends and their lovers will take them home to bed. Because they're tired little lesbians.
Be happy little lesbians.
Picnic time for lesbians. What fun the lusty lesbians are having, a lovely time today.
Watch them run and play.
Watch them catch them on a whiz. Surprise and see them picnic on their holiday.
Is their special day?
See them gaily gad about and rock. They love to play and shout. They never have any cares. The lesbians at play at 6 o'clock. Their friends and their lovers will take them home to bed, because they're tired little lesbians.
From 1998. That was Dyke Appella, Lesbian Picnic, from the album At the Gates of Heaven. This is Queer Voices.
We all have to do that little disco thing at the beginning.
It's the Queer Voices dance.
If you could only see us.
Yes.
Well,
you can see this on your webcast, because we are on webcast. We're not going to tell you where to find it, but we're there.
You're mean.
You can just picture it in your mind.
Well, how many people, not many people know this is nude radio.
Yeah, you wish. Okay, so as we continue along on Queer Voices, we have our favorite political beat reporter, Jeff Reed. And what else are you going to talk about? But
the presidential primary. That is
the
number
polls.
One, the number two, the number three political story. Certainly, I always prefer to talk about, you know, city and local things. But, you know, hey, we just had a big election and we did really well. So now it's up to the presidential primaries to sort of keep our interest. And boy, have they, right? I mean, it's been really amazing on the Democratic side, which is, I should say up front that I'm a big Obama fan. I know that she's a big Hillary fan.
She being Deborah.
I'm not sure what Jennifer's...
I remain neutral at this time.
Being
I
the
represent
president
all
of
the caucus, which is...
So that's perfect. But that being said, you know, I always try to just approach these things from a naked analytical point of view, so it doesn't really matter, you know, who our support... I think it's still an amazing story to see what happened in Iowa with Obama, and then to see what happened in New Hampshire with Hillary. Both, you know, in both cases, it was really... boy, I can't remember watching primary results and being so excited and interested by the process.
Just the fact that people are watching debates and primary results this early
in
the game is kind of freaking me out.
Well, and you know, I mean, the good news for Democrats is the massive turnout. Like, you know, reality check here, you know, we can argue all day about, well, is Hillary going to win? Is Obama going to win? But, you know, the sheer numbers of votes... I mean, even Edwards was getting more votes than most of the Republicans, right? So if you just look at the turnout and you kind of do the naked calculation of assuming that Republicans are going to vote for Republicans and Democrats are going to vote for, you know, people voting in the Democratic primary are going to vote for Democrats. And that's not always true, especially in New Hampshire where there's a lot of independents. And you know, that actually may be part of why there was some surprise on in New Hampshire with Hillary's win. You know, a lot of independents may have intended to vote for Obama when they were talking to the pollsters, but when they got sort of tired of this kind of coronation of Obama that seemed to be happening in the press, they decided, well, I'd rather go vote for McCain because I'm not a big fan of Huck. But it just goes to show how, you know, you can't just read the polls. And again, you know, full disclosure, I'm as guilty as anyone. I predicted a big win for Obama, mostly based on the fact that everybody was predicting a big win for Obama and the polls were predicting a big win for Obama. And he certainly had the momentum coming out of Iowa. So there was every reason to expect it. But, you know, boy, you know, you have to wait till people actually go vote to figure out what the result is going to be. And people forget that sometimes.
Because a lot of people have asked me this, and I've kind of given them my view of, you know, what it is all about. But it seemed like the media was making such a big deal out of Iowa, as I have never seen before. What is the significance of, I mean, it's this, you know, middle of the country, small state,
well,
not that many delegates.
So I actually have, being from a big coastal state with a relatively large population, I have big issues with the primary process. I don't understand why we cede essentially deciding who the presidential candidates are going to be, because we do,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to a sort of relatively unrepresentative, i.e. they're mostly white people out there, folks, in New Hampshire and Iowa. There ain't a lot of brown and black people. There ain't a lot of yellow people. There ain't a lot of red people. There certainly aren't a lot of blue people.
Or purple ones.
But
maybe a few Jones up there in Iowa.
But, you know, so it is kind of a peculiar artifact of the American political process that we have this calendar that essentially allows, you know, some real kind of, all other things being equal, some really insignificant sort of party level poll in a state like Iowa, in a town that probably no one has ever heard of, like Waterloo or something, to actually, you know, be courted, called, kissed up to by the people at the highest level in presidential politics.
I think
one of the interesting things is that when you total up all of the votes, both in the Democratic and the Republican primaries, you add up all the votes, it's less than a million votes, but yet, you know, it seems to have so much significance magnified through the media.
Yeah, well,
and it's less than a million votes.
Well, and you have to remember, too, you know, the political process is, unfortunately, the most important part of the political process is about money. And yeah, the media certainly does magnify things, and that's, I think, where this kind of, you know, they like a good story. And, hey, you know, Obama winning Iowa is a great story. The first African-American to win a primary in a presidential election ever. I mean, you know, very moving speeches and really, I think, an important moment in American political history. But, you know, reality check, we're still involved in an election. It, just because he won Iowa doesn't mean it's over. And, yeah, it's a great story. But, you know, the people in the media, they really want to be able to say, this person is up, this person is down, this person is the winner today, this person is the loser. It's always the thumbs up, thumbs down thing. And, you know, the real important calculations really come down to, are the major donors moved by that? Are they going to give money now to Obama that they wouldn't have given to Hillary before?
No.
Or are they going to give money to Huckabee now that they were going to previously give to Romney?
Another, going back to my numbers I just gave, that they spent a little over $11 a vote.
Oh,
all
yeah.
totaled money spent in the two races, $11 a vote.
It is absolutely ridiculous. Although, you know, in the defense of the process, again, trying to just kind of do the analysis and not be too biased by my own opinions, it is interesting because by focusing in small states and focusing in states where a lot of money can be spent on a few votes, it is really truly retail politics. This is where people are sitting at the Pancake House and shaking hands and talking to people. And that really changes on Super Tuesday when it becomes more sort of wholesale politics where it's big speeches to thousands and thousands of people and it's more about TV ads and it's not so much about actually talking and interacting with individual voters. And, you know, that has pluses and minuses for various candidates.
Why don't we just have a primary that's on one day?
You know, why do we have an electoral college? Why do we have,
oh,
you know, a two-party system?
Why,
you know,
oh
it
my.
Is it's an artifact of the American political system. There are entrenched, powerful. I mean, you saw this in the changing of the primary calendar, right? There's a reason why the Michigan delegates on the Democratic side are not relevant this time, right? And it's because when these states started moving around their primaries, the powerful people who have become more and more powerful by the artifact of being in these states that are allowed to decide the presidential primaries early, you know, got mad because there's a lot of money that gets spent in Iowa. That's a lot of income for the state of Iowa. So, you know, they're trying to protect it. And so it's going to be really hard to, I mean, it's always hard to change the system, but it's going to be really hard to kind of rattle away from, you know, rattle that sort of power away from the people in the smaller states. And you know, really, it's hard to argue from the point of view if you're somebody in Iowa saying, well, yeah, we want to give up all, you know, hey, I'd like to be one of the, you know, polls well, who gets calls from Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, too, right?
And in Texas, we don't have our primary until March, and usually by that time, it is pretty well decided.
Yeah.
There was an effort to move it up, but our state legislature said, no way, Jose, and so...
Well, so, you know, I mean, there, you know, I would love to change... I would actually change a lot about the way American voting is done. I think that Election Day should be a national holiday.
On another show,
and yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but there's a lot that's wrong with it.
Let's move on to New Hampshire, because they kept talking about Hillary's upset, which was, I think, a 2% lead over Obama there. And it was a surprise upset, which it was not so much a surprise for me. But there's this whole business of her showing vulnerability as a female.
So you're talking about the crying clip. You know, that is the most overblown story I have ever seen. I actually read the news, just the headline, you know, Hillary cries, and I was thinking, oh my God, this is serious, you know. And then I went and saw the clip, and I was like, that's it? That's what they're talking about? She's just sitting there talking and, you know...
Being emotional.
Well,
you know, it's not... I mean,
But she wasn't that emotional. Like,
well,
you read
the
headline, and it sounded like she was weeping.
Yeah.
And, you know,
exactly.
The president does it all the time.
But you saw the clip, and it was like she... I mean, you know, she obviously, you know, choked up a little bit, and she was having a bit of a moment, but it wasn't anything...
On NPR, they talked with some women, because it was at a women's gathering where this occurred, and most of them expressed that how it touched them was that she showed passion. And when you listen to what she was talking about, she was talking about this system and kind of the dream of, we're real people and we can aspire to things and we can, you know, make a difference by, like, being the president of the United States. And I think maybe that, you know, to me, it was more of that. But when Edmund Muskie cried,
well, he certainly showed a little more emotion than she did.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, there seems to be issues of racism and sexism, and they seem to be all skewed up.
Well,
they're not.
It's a double standard again.
Yeah, there's a double standard, but there's also not always what you expect.
Well, so I actually don't think the most important. So the most important thing about these stories is about expectations. And I think that's sort of the broad take-home message. The reason it was an upset in New Hampshire was all based on expectations. If you know, the polls from 2 weeks previous to Iowa, they were actually calling Hillary, you know, roughly at that level or maybe even a little bit better. So if Iowa hadn't gone how it was and had, you know, through the echo chamber of the media, which just got crazy about that story, right, made the expectations completely different, then that wouldn't have been the storyline.
And her donations went up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it always happens when you're the winner in one of these primaries.
So what is next?
Well, but so I want to go back to the emotional thing, though, a little bit. Just because, you know, the emotion gets shown, I don't think unless the media amplifies that.
Right.
And, you know, the storyline they were telling, I thought was really obnoxious about it, because a lot of it was, Hillary Clinton was a robot and now she's not a robot anymore. And, you know, I mean, Bill Kristol went on Fox News and said she faked crying. And it was like, you know what? Like, he doesn't know that, right?
But,
and he's just playing his bias.
The irony in that before women were like, okay, they're not strong enough to be the president. I was saying, you know, they're weak and all that. And so suddenly the very thing that women have been criticized as not being capable of being president, I'm doing quotation marks in the air again.
For all of you out there.
Seems to be like the very thing that is, yeah. People are going, she's a woman, yay.
Well, I got to go back to the fact is, you know, how many times has the president of the United States, the current president of the United States, wept on TV over something? And, you know, 9/11 was one thing, but he still does it.
Certainly, he's shown the same level of emotion that she's shown, and it hasn't been discussed. Although, you know, Hillary is special. I mean, she's not just a woman. She's Hillary Clinton.
And
there are good things and bad things that come with that. And I think one of the reasons this story got amplified, one of the reasons the emotion got amplified, and one of the reasons the upset story got amplified was, you know, there were a lot of Republicans out there who were putting nails in her coffin before she was dead, right?
Oh, well, I mean,
and that amplified the whole storyline. And when they saw the bit of emotion, it's like, oh, you know, we got her, you know, we made her cry, you know. It's like, I think there is a lot of animus out there on the Republican side that's really rooting for her to get, like, creamed, and that's what a lot of this is about. And so when the media
sort of
story,
well, I think they're afraid of her being the nominee, and they're spinning it out that she can't win, so that Democrats won't select her because they're afraid she really can win.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, there are certain radio shows on the national radio shows, I think 1 and 2, if I'm not mistaken, who blatantly say the Stop Hillary Express.
Interesting that you should bring that up, because occasionally, as I'm tuning across, I stumble across those ultra white right wing conservative. Yeah,
Same thing. White wing works too.
Interesting slip of the tongue. Conservative talk shows, and they're spending all their time talking about the Democratic race.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. Yeah. It is.
And that is a good point. We didn't talk much. I mean, we're a bit out of time here. But, you know, the Republican race also has some real peculiarities. And I think the interesting take-home message is, you know, don't necessarily buy into the storyline that the media gives you, because the media has an interest in selling advertising. And they can sell a lot of advertising with the Hillary Clinton is dead story and the Hillary Clinton is resurrected story, right?
Well, maybe when you come back next month, we can talk a little bit more about the Republicans and their messages. And we've got to move along to get to the rest of This Way Out. And following that, we'll talk with the sister from the Sisters Late Night Catechism production at Stages. And believe me, you want to stay tuned for her.
Yeah, you bet, sister.
Especially if you're a Catholic.
Yeah.
Even if you're not.
We've been talking with Jeff Reed, our political pundit. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
We're leaping into the world of legendary queer literati with a look at an iconic bi lesbian poet and a chat with a hot gay playwright. Back to Bach.
Mae Sarton, prolific 20th century writer, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Born in Belgium in 1912, Mae Sarton came to America and embarked on a notable career as a poet and novelist. Early on, she taught creative writing at Wellesley College. She was awarded honorary doctorate degrees from more than a dozen colleges and universities. Although Sarton had affairs with both sexes, her intimate relationships with women inspired much of her poetry. And since many of her novels portrayed positive lesbian experiences, she is credited for strengthening the lesbian movement. At times, Sarton detailed her own lesbian relationships in her journals, which became a common staple in women's studies courses. Her most significant lesbian relationship was with Juliet Huxley. After Huxley's death in 1994, an elderly Sarton said, "I have had many lovers, many friends, but none has so nourished the poet and the lover as she did." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Candace Gingrich.
Hi, this is Dan Matthews, author of Committed, a rabble-rouser's memoir, and senior vice president of PETA. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Canadian-born Adam Bach is an openly gay, Obie Award-winning playwright who's clearly benefited from an activist upbringing. He writes dialogue that sounds like real people, like the out-of-the-mainstream characters he enjoys putting on stage. His latest play, The Shaker Chair, running through January 27th at the San Francisco Bay Area's Encore Theater Company, explores themes of personal change and environmental justice. This Way Out correspondent Brian Goble sat down with Adam Bach for a wide-ranging conversation about his ACT-UP activism and the women who inspired it, his process as a writer, and his identity as a gay playwright.
Tony Kushner mentioned you to me when I recently interviewed him in New York, and he's like, "Oh, there's a number of great playwrights out there. This is guy Adam Bach,
That's sweet.
And his theater, of course, is very political, and his politics are firmly entrenched in his art. And so I'm just curious who your inspirations are today in terms of
who inspires me as a writer, other writers.
Yeah.
The people I really look to, Carol Churchill, obviously, is amazing. Kushner's amazing. I love Shakespeare. I love Chekhov. Strindberg. I like the guys who are a little dreamier. I had a teacher who said, you don't really need to tell people your politics because they're in you, no matter what. And she also said that how a play is produced is the politics. So if I'm a feminist, if I'm going to allow actresses on stage, that's going to happen, or I'll have a female director, or I'll have female designers, or I'll have a female producer, or, I'm really interested in gay rights and gay writing for gay people, I push to have gay actors or a gay director and see whether that makes a difference or whether or not does a different sound come out. And for me, putting gay guys in the middle of a play instead of always on the side. So that's the sort of stuff I try to do. There was this sort of great quote by Thornton Wilder who said, reason Shakespeare's so wonderful is that you can't really hear the axe grind. And what I think he means by that is that he shows you the world and then allows you to think, what do I think of that? What do I think about Hamlet? Did he make the right choice or didn't he? And there's something so interesting about not telling people what to think, because in this world where we're always telling each other what to think, we're always fighting for the ability to have people do what we want. There's sort of an authoritarian quality to art sometimes. I'm like, now what would happen if I showed them and then really see whether or not the audience can sort of fight amongst themselves afterwards? I'm always sort of delighted whenever afterwards you watch a couple and one likes it and one doesn't, because that means that they might fight on the way home, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, that's the kind of theater that you're doing. You're sort of empowering people to think for themselves.
I don't think they need to be empowered. I think I just need to be a little quieter sometimes, and allow it to be more present. And I have very strong ideas about how things should be done, and I have strong beliefs, but I've been trying to learn myself to be more collaborative and to allow other voices out stronger, because I think that that's maybe helpful in the world.
And you're working full-time as a playwright now, is that right?
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah, it's lovely.
You've been writing for a long time, though, haven't you?
Yeah,
since you were
a long
kid,
time.
Right?
Well, I wrote ever since I was a kid. I started writing in third, fourth grade, because these girls in my third grade class decided to do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, a play. And they made me a Oompa Loompa. I was really annoyed. So I went home and I decided to rewrite James and the Giant Peach. I made myself James. My cousin was a centipede. And we had sort of these two rival theater companies in third grade. I did some sort of site-specific work. I did Harriet the Spy out in someone's backyard. I just kept writing. And I've always written plays. I don't know why. I tried writing poetry. I'm not very good at it.
Your mom and was it your aunt you said?
Yeah.
Were activists. What was that like growing up? You grew up in Canada.
Right. My mom and my aunt were slightly different. My mom I think, believes a little stronger that you can work within the system. My aunt didn't. So she would, my aunt would take us and we would do sort of these terrible things, which were for good cause.
Like what?
Well, I wonder whether I'm supposed to say, but I do remember, I've got one sort of great story that she and a friend did when they were in their 50s or maybe even their 60s. My aunt dressed up like a bear, and her friend dressed up like a moose. And they had a truck that they'd strapped sort of a stuffed man across the front as though it was a deer that was strapped to the hood of a car. And on the sides of it, they put signs that said, J'aime la chasse, I love to hunt. So the bear was driving, and the moose was there, and they drove down to the center of Montreal. And when they got there, the police stopped them and started giving the bear a breathalyzer test. And there was an audience around them, and there were the French guys going, leave the bear alone. You know, so she sort of taught me how to use sort of theatricality to get attention. Because they were always trying to draw attention to problems. She was one of the people that went up to the north and spray painted the baby pup seals so they could, people would know what was going on with a seal hunt. I sort of grew up with that my whole life. And I remember Earth Days. My mom would put a gas mask on us to walk to school, you know, stuff like that.
You were an activist at one point, right?
Yeah.
Weren't you a member of ACT UP, right?
Yeah. I did it in Rhode Island. After I got out of grad school, I did a play in New York and had sort of a terrible experience. I liked the people who did the play, but one of the producers was really harsh, and it was too hard. So I went back to Rhode Island and said, oh, I'm quitting theater. But I had a group of friends who wanted to do a coming out play, like a little playlet at a coming out celebration back in the 90s, early 90s, and they wanted to play Chanel models. So I wrote them a little piece called The House of Chanel Goes to ACT UP, because I was also involved at ACT UP at the time, right? Yeah, totally. So there were these three girls, boy girls, who went, and they were like, you know, what are you going to wear? What are you going to wear? And they had little signs with little Chanel models, signs on them, and they're very, very sweet. It was a huge hit. So then I started doing theater with ACT UP, where we would, I remember one year we sort of cut off the head of the editor of the Providence Journal in effigy, you know, and we would do any sort of thing to get attention to the fact that the AIDS funding wasn't happening or there were bills or this. And I also at the same time did this once a year show called The Gay Boy Nutcracker, which I took the music from The Nutcracker and I would put gay sort of dances to it. So I had a dyke ballet with 18 out lesbians and tutus jumping and jumping. I remember I went and I had them all in front of me and I said, so in this we're going to do a ballet and you're all going to need tutus. And they're like, tutus? How are we going to have a tutu? And then they were all like, well, we better have a craft party, so we'll put tutus together. Well, I bet we could find tulle or something. I was like, a gay guy could make tutu out of like a, you know, a bunch of flowers or something found around the house. And I was like, oh dear, these girls are going to be... And then I said, but we also need some basketballs and some power tools, and all their hands shot up. They were all set. That was easy to get, you know, it was very good. But they were out there lifting each other and dancing. It was all choreographed by a real choreographer. And it's like the first time they'd been on stage as lesbians. And we did it in a huge sort of place. It was $4 to come in that we gave to an AIDS hospice. But by the end, the fourth year, like 800 people came. And it was this big community event. And so I sort of got back into theater and realized that kind of have to do it for the community in some way. And that's sort of what I keep trying to figure out. How do you write a play that actually speaks to the people in the audience? So it actually matters. It's not just me telling a story. I end up writing about people who usually aren't on stage. I write about a lot of gay guys. I write about older women. Put them in the center thing.
I wanted to ask you briefly about the way you write dialogue and, and your process. I mean, you've won an award for your playwriting, a couple of awards actually, and your writing has been described as, you know, a lot of things: poetic, expressive, non-traditional, abstract.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe it, and what is your process for writing dialogue?
Well, people notice my dialogue, I think, because I don't hear full sentences. I'm trying to do them for this radio show. But when I talk, I don't go... I get stopped and started, and I sometimes make no sense. If you looked at it on the page, it would be... I remember when they were doing The Receptionist in New York, they were reading back the lines. They'll say, "Line, please," the actor, and then the person reading back would go, "What? No. What? What? No." And that's what sometimes happens when people talk, especially when people get emotional. Their language disappears, or it jumps in their mouth. And so I try to listen to that. I try to listen sort of the dance of language and where feeling corrupts it, or where feeling, you know, if you really want to make a point, you repeat, you know, and it drives into the person. So I try to get that down on the page. And to other people, it looks like it's poetry, but to me, it actually, I'm just trying to transcribe it.
Anne Kaufman, who you've worked with in New York.
She's great.
Yeah, she talks about leaving what she calls air in there that's not necessarily accounted for.
Right.
Which is really interesting. How does that work for you in terms of when you write the dialogue and when the director comes in,
right,
and the actors make it alive?
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
I kind of figure that what I'm supposed to do is write the language, and I don't worry about where they're going to move. Or what I think about is, how is the emotion affecting the language? How is the action affecting the language? How much would you say if you were running across a stage? And so I have a basic idea of people moving, but really I try to do a emotional landscape that's reflected in the language. So then along comes the director, which is fabulous, starts making it physical and starts matching that. And because I haven't actually told them what to do, they actually have room to have their imagination sort of go. The actors then come in and get to sit inside that and actually do even more. I try to encourage them to do more sometimes I'll use gesture instead of language. Someone will say a line, "I'm so angry at you." The response is a wave of the hand instead of actually words. And that to know that sometimes physical gesture is language.
Are you like Tony Kushner in the sense he talks about, you know, for example, his play Angels in America? He's like, you know, he had many dramaturgs, he had many friends. It was kind of he doesn't want to describe it as a collaborative thing, because then that means he's have to share, you know, you have to put other people's names in the byline, you know. But it is kind of a community process. Is it like that for you when you're writing a play? Are you getting feedback from friends? Really?
No.
So you're the solitary writer who goes in his
what room. I will do is I'll go and I'll tell jokes and I'll see whether they work. I'll be like, "How is this?" And then I'll see if people's eyes light up a little bit. You know, I'll be like, "Oh, there's a guy in love with a shark." And they go, "Really?" And then I'm like, "Okay, I'm on to something." You know, I have a play called The Thugs where it's a group of temps. And I sort of figured out how it was, but I always say, "Oh, it's a group of temps and they're in a big building on the 9th floor and they think someone might be killing people in the building, but they don't know because they're temps." And then people would laugh. So I was like, "Oh, yeah, that works." You know, so I do it that way. But I think actually I'm so easily swayed by other people's opinions at times that I need to be quiet and listen. What do I think? Write it down really strongly and then really let the director do what they think with it. And then really let the actors do what they want with it.
Because people have so many different ideas, and you can start running off in so many different directions.
Yeah, you can get lost in other people's... it's so often, as a playwright, people come up and say, "You should write a play about blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Well, no, maybe you should write that play." You know, that would be good if you wrote it.
Tune in for the conclusion of Brian Goebel's conversation with award-winning gay playwright Adam Bach.
I'm Canadian. I'm gay. I'm white. I'm male. I'm 46. My experiences are my experiences. And there is something about being gay in this culture, you know, that affects how I see the world, how I'm treated, how I see other people being treated, who I identify with, and what things I might notice that I think straight people don't notice.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Candace Gingrich, and Brian Goble contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from several special CD thank you gifts. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. I'm 2YOU, Tamworth, New South Wales, WORT, Madison, Wisconsin, KEOS, College Station, Texas, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And coming up next on Queer Voices, Stage's production of Sisters Late Night Catechism 2.
Have I just twisted reality? Or have my dreams come true? Do you really want to be with me as much as I want to be with you? Always be there to love me.
Love me,
and always be there to hold me.
Hold me,
yeah, always be there to touch me.
Touch me, touch me.
I just
touch
want
me
to be sure
me
of you. I look at you and I come home at night. And I wonder what I did so right. You know you're such an inspiration. I'm in for life without probation. Just always be there to love me.
Love me.
And always be there to hold me.
Hold me.
Yeah, always be there to touch me. I just
touch
want
me
to be sure of you.
I just wanted to be sure of you. I want to be a part of all you do. I just wanted to be sure of you. I want to be a part of all you do.
You're the best exhibit in the boyfriend zoo. In a Hardy Boys mystery, you're the greatest clue. Though I've always been partial to Nancy Drew.
Nancy boy, Nancy boy, Nancy Drew. Nancy boy, Nancy boy, Nancy Drew. Nancy boy, Nancy boy, Nancy Drew.
I just wanted to be sure of you.
I want to be a part of all you do. I just wanted to be sure of you. I want to be a part of all you do.
Nancy boy, Nancy boy, Nancy Drew.
Nancy boy, Nancy boy, Nancy Drew.
Have
From 1999, the Bootlickers from their self-titled album, Sure of You. This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell along with
Brian Levinka.
And, you know, they always say that people shouldn't talk about politics or religion.
Never talk about politics or religion.
Yeah, but
we're going to do it.
But because we're Queer Voices, and by golly, we're going to talk about stuff. So we had Jeff on talking about politics, and now we have the good sister, one of the members of the Sisters of Perpetual Sorrow. She's here with us from Stages, and she's teaching her catechism class.
Catechism.
I can't say it correctly.
All right,
I'm so sorry.
You probably weren't brought up in a catechism.
No, so. I was spared that. Thank you.
Did you say spared?
Yes, I did.
I have a snippy attitude at
ESPN. Yes.
But Brian, I understand, even though that's not a Catholic name. Brian, you went to Catholic school, huh?
Well, I did the catechism, and I did all of the stuff in the... I grew up Catholic, and I'm what I call a Catholic refugee. And there's a lot of people out there that kind of... are brought up Catholic, including my partner David, and we have the Catholic sensibilities, but we kind of drifted away and kind of.
You look like a drifter.
Yeah. I am a drifter.
Looking at you up close.
Don't look too close.
Come on back. We've got nice prizes, honey.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, if you answer the sister's questions correctly, she does reward you.
You could get looking good for Jesus lip gloss,
which you could probably use.
Moisturize those lips with Jesus lip gloss.
That's right. Now, there was a sister's that was not number two. It was the original. But they're not a series that like a sequel.
No, this is a brand new show with all different material. We basically talk about how to get into heaven and avoid hell, the two of you look like you could really benefit from.
And I think our listeners could benefit from this.
Our listeners, I am sure.
Yes.
And
the Catholic Church is like a big chutes and ladders game. You know, you do something good, you go up the ladder to heaven, do something bad, down the chute to hell.
Yes,
couple Hail Marys and you're on your way.
And you do demonstrate that on your banner that you made.
Felt banner. Yes, I made that
And
banner.
You have little figures that stick on.
Yes, I could put your head in purgatory or maybe in heaven, depending on what you've been up to.
Yes. You do explain about how it used to be a sin if you ate meat on Friday.
That's right.
But it's not anymore.
I grew up deathly afraid of eating meat on Friday. It was always fish. And I still kind of have that.
Jesus died on a Friday,
that's
Brian.
Right. That's right. Yes, ma'am.
That's why we do that. But, you know, I grew up in a family where you had to eat the hot tuna casserole with the potato chips on top. So, you know,
like
my fear of
crunch.
Fish.
That crunch is good.
My fear of fish is deeply ingrained just from Friday night, my mom's cooking.
Right. And are we celebrating any feast days today?
You know, I did not check. I was so exhausted because I ran in the marathon yesterday.
How did you do?
I'm lying. I'm completely lying about that. I watched him, though.
Which is a sin.
I looked down off a bridge. I saw him running by.
He caught you there. Yes. He said that would be a sin.
That was a white lie.
Please confess.
Yeah. Was that a moral
sin?
See,
all nuns go to heaven, Brian.
Oh, yes.
I got a seat right near
Bride
Jesus.
Of Christ.
You can slap my hand.
I am on the dance floor.
Yes. Bride of Christ.
That's right.
Exactly.
Mrs. Christ to you.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, see, now that would be Gunsmoke. You say yes, sister.
Yes, sister.
Not yes, ma'am. I know it's
been
Texas.
A while. It's
I know
been
it
a while.
gets
Yes,
but if you go to Stages and see the sister, you will quickly recall
absolutely
much
it'll
of
be,
your Catholic upbringing
instantaneously,
or even Baptist Bible
school.
That's
right. This material is not just directed at Catholics. I think anybody that grew up and back in the heyday remember discipline when you really couldn't bring a Glock to school under your skirt, or you know. You actually
had pants down around your knees.
Yeah, you couldn't sag. Sagging was not allowed in the old days, and that is punishable.
And the sister is also very big on modesty.
That would be nice.
You've had
try
some
to dress like the Virgin Mary.
That's the goal.
Yeah, what would Mary wear? Not what would Jesus do. What would Mary wear?
And so if a woman comes in and she's maybe showing some cleavage...
Well, that's a sin. It's a right. sin for wearing that tube top or whatever she has on. And then it's another sin in every man that has an impure thought, or woman, whatever. Whoever has an impure thought looking at her, see, that compounds it. Next thing you know, you've dragged 30, 40 people to purgatory with you on the same bus.
Oh, my gosh.
See how that...
It just
multiplies.
It does. Kind of like the fishes mm-hmm. and the loaves.
Now, would you be appearing on stage by yourself, or do you have other people accompanying you?
Yes, it's a one-woman interactive program.
A one-sister show.
That's right. But okay. it's different every night because you're always picking on different people oh. for different crimes.
Oh, you know, that makes people very nervous when they get picked on. But you know what? Some people deserve it.
Some people...
Well,
beg for it.
As yeah, they exactly. say,
beg for it.
As the sister says, sometimes you feel guilty
because you are guilty.
That's right.
And some people, yes. Some people just want to be spanked.
Oh, you know, my friend.
Oh. That's right. They come in looking for trouble and they find it.
And there it is.
There it is. Yeah,
now,
that's right.
I attended Friday night, and I was with Catholic friends who loved it. Loved the performance, and I loved it. And you do take questions, like some people asked you certain questions, mm-hmm. and you explain to them why certain things. You said that, well, it was a sin, or, you know, this is why we do it, or whatnot. But no one asked any questions about homosexuality.
Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And my answer to that is, yeah, absolutely. People bring it up, and I say that Jesus liked to say, I am what thou art what I am. I don't think he just meant some of us.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Jesus was not a hater.
No.
So, you know, I think there's been a lot of scandal in the church, all kidding aside, and I don't think that's funny. I think it's sad, but I also say, once again, that's why girls are good and boys are bad.
She says that often.
You don't hear that kind of stuff out of the nuns.
Not very much. Right. No.
And I highly suggest that when you attend this play, and you must attend, it's more required. It's a required part of the curriculum.
Well, go or go to hell, I like to
That's
say.
That's right.
Go
you
or
know,
go to hell.
You,
go,
mm-hmm. You do not want to be late.
Oh, no.
That'll cost you.
That will cost you. The sister will reprimand you severely.
So fashionably late is not...
It's
not,
no fashion.
Not nothing fashionable about being late, sweetheart.
Exactly.
No. Get a watch. Get a watch with a battery.
I like to be on time, but I know a lot of people that want to show up and have everyone look at them when they walk through the door. So this, not for this.
They will not want that to happen.
Probably had that extra glass of wine at dinner that they end up regretting.
I swear, you know my friends.
I'm just looking right at you. Like I said, you look like a drifter, Brian.
The path is, it's a long path.
Have you ever had a question that just stumped you?
Usually there's a way out of it. I mean, somebody asked me a million years ago about Rogation and Ember Days, which we haven't had those in a very long time. They're basically days of penance and fasting, and I looked them up, and I know them now.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, you really do have to study a lot of theology to do this show. Uh-huh. And also politics. I like to see what's going on in current events.
Uh-huh.
Like I always tell people that, you know, purgatory is where you go when you're not good enough to get to heaven and not bad enough to go to hell. Like the DA here, see?
Exactly.
Oh.
You know.
Ooh, that's current events. Tying it right in there.
Yeah. Oh, she's very current.
So I kind of like to see what's going on in Houston and keep it rolling. I'm also, during the run of the show, I am collecting for the Sisters of Charity. I don't know if you're aware of this, but through the catechism shows, we found out when Social Security was implemented in this country, the Catholic Church opted out. And by that, I mean the nuns did not get Social Security. The convents are in real trouble. And these are women that walk the walk, walk the talk. Mm-hmm. They help the poorest of the poor. They're nurses, they're teachers. They work for peace. They go to some of the scariest places in the city as well as the world. So during the run of this show, I am collecting now for the Sisters of Charity, who have a very proud tradition right here in Houston. So
Houston's a very giving city.
And it's an optional. It's an optional, but I...
But strongly advised.
But I'm standing there with a basket
a
like a goalie at a hockey game, so good luck getting past me with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, if you can get past her in that habit,
but
yeah,
anyway,
lots of
luck. That'll shave some time off your purgatory sentence you if go. You donate to the sister.
Yeah, and maybe help a little bit with that drifting.
Now, sister, I detect, is it a Midwestern accent?
Or? It's right, Brian. I was raised in Chicago.
Chicago.
Irish Catholic mob.
Irish Catholic,
That's right.
Good Midwestern values.
That's right.
Very good.
But I've been living in the depraved West Coast for a long time.
Oh, yes.
So. And
you're one of several sisters that have that are going about the country doing performances.
Doing the catechism shows.
Yeah.
The
Late
Night One has been going 14 years. This is really the follow-up to that is Late Night Catechism, too. And then we also have the Christmas rendition. The Mystery of the Magi's Gold, which Bethlehem CSI. Did you see that?
Bethlehem CSI.
No, they had announced it, and I didn't get a chance.
You missed the opportunity. You could have been dressed up as one of the Magi, or maybe
a
sheep or something.
I could see you as a Magi.
I love all of the performances at stages. I love the intimacy of the theater.
I love the people that run it and the people that work there. They're kind and they're loving and open-hearted and open-minded. And
they take risks there.
They do.
Kind of risky. They're not the traditional,
No.
But there's risky and there's interesting.
Yes.
You know, I think they're both.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you can be bored out of your skull with something that's supposed to be real. Outre and risky, and I think they're great.
Both the sisters show and Altar Boys, that is also playing at stages, have been reported to be two of the funniest plays that you'll ever want to see in your life.
Oh my God, that Altar Boys is hilarious. You have
and there's
through.
A bar. Did I mention that?
Yep.
Okay. Now, how does this work when people imbibe and then... It's okay to drink wine, right?
That's right. That's right. But Jesus loved to turn water into wine.
Mm-hmm. And how did he start doing that?
His mother nagged him into it at the wedding at Cana.
He didn't really want to go into this business.
She said, Jesus, they're out of wine. He said, Mother... She said, come on.
You're the son of God. Come on.
He did it.
Yeah.
That was his first one.
Yeah.
It's been added, you know, for a long time.
Yeah. I think Mary really is the Holy Spirit. And you know, what Jewish mother do you know that's not going to forgive her boy?
Well, you're confused. There are... I'm sorry. We love Mary. We love Catholics.
We do
love
Mary.
Love Mary.
Yes.
You know. But the Holy Spirit... is usually shown in the form of a dove. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit, and then there's Mary.
Uh-huh.
Now
Trinity.
We pray to Mary a lot because Mary can get God's ear.
Uh huh.
You know, and nobody nags like a Jewish mother. You're right.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, we love Mary.
Yeah. And you do explain some things about people that are physically in heaven. And people that are spiritually, like who is in heaven?
Well, you'll have to come to the show and find out, but we don't want to give too much away here, sweetheart. But you know, we haven't had Judgment Day. I know there's some evangelicals out there that, you know...
It's supposed to happen any day now, I hear. I'm watching TV.
What time is it?
I know, right?
But, you know, Judgment Day, you'll get your body back.
Uh-huh.
So if anybody's having some separation anxiety...
We can't have somebody else's body, like a better body.
You can have the body you had when you were 30.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, okay.
Well, whatever you match up on the driver's license, that's all.
Oh,
yeah.
So cute, yeah.
And now the path to getting to heaven is through penance. Is that correct?
Well, doing good works. Doing good works. And we discussed that. Maybe having your friends and family pray you out of purgatory, too. So it pays to be nice to the people you know right now.
Oh. And you do have a handout. That explains about the Ten Commandments.
Sins, and sample sins. Mm-hmm. Sample sins that you might not know are a sin.
So a handy little guide to keeping on the right path.
That's right.
Nice.
That's exactly right. And then I have some sins for 2008 that
new sins.
Ah. Things that were not in the Baltimore Catechism back in the day.
Right. And she does have prizes so that if she asks you a question and you answer it properly, or sometimes even if you don't have the
cool
right answer,
stuff.
She has a pencil that has all of the United States presidents on it, and she suggests that if you sharpen it, you can get rid of the last administration.
Oh, wow.
Sharpen it quickly.
Which I thought was intriguing.
Appeals to our audience.
The stage is set as a classroom, and there's lots of pictures of John F. Kennedy, I noticed.
We love him.
A great Catholic.
A great. And Jackie, of course.
Marilyn Monroe was just a rumor.
Yeah, uh-huh. If I was the president of the United States and I wanted to be with somebody, I'd be with Marilyn Monroe. Okay.
Yeah.
So, when can people see you, good sister?
Friday and Saturdays at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 3.
After Mass.
After Mass or after the Pancake House, would just show up. And we'll have a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. It's a smart, funny show, and I'm not the only one in it. You'll be in it, too, if you show up with the right attitude.
Yeah.
And or the wrong attitude.
Say where
you'll
Stages
still be in it.
Is and how people can get tickets.
Well, it's at 3201 Allen Parkway, near Wall Drive, so kind of near, let's see, what's a close landmark?
It's close to the Guava Lamp.
It's close to Guava
That's
Lamp.
Right.
It's close to the Royalton, the tall tower that has like the alien landing pad on top.
It's off D'Amico Street.
Uh-huh. D'Amico.
To D'Amico.
Yes. It's a nice little building that was converted. I don't know what it used to be.
At one time it was the Children's Museum.
It's an awesome building.
Yeah,
now, is this
on
the smaller stage or is this on the larger stage? I know that, I guess,
I think I'm in the smaller. Oh, I'm in the larger one? Oh, okay. I guess I'm in the larger one.
Okay. Well, there's, you know, more people.
I should walk around the building and see where I am.
Right.
I just walk right in. I'm just a busy beaver.
Well, we will reveal. Give the.
How about the website? Yes. www.stagestheatre. That's with an RE.com. So stagestheatre.com.
Actually, it's the French pronunciation théâtre.
Theatra.
Thank you very much.
And then the phone number.
Phone number is 713-527-0123.
Brian, you're cute as a button.
Isn't he?
Oh.
And we want to thank the sister who is here in the persona of Noni Newton Breen. Is that how
you
say it?
It's a mouthful. Yeah, that's
it. Is.
That's me.
Half a
name. That's my
name.
Alias.
That's her alias.
When I'm not sister, I'm,
wait, say that
I'm
again.
Her. Noni Newton Breen.
Yes.
Wow.
And she does a great job, and she looks great.
She
out
makes,
of
she,
a habit.
She makes me want to pray right now.
I know. I know. So thank you for being here with us
thank
on
y'all.
Queer Voices, and join us next Monday night.
Oh, I didn't get here sick.
Join us next week when we'll have a discussion on lesbian lives, activities, and issues facing gay women. News and features from This Way Out. And Love Janis, the story of rock star Janis Joplin. That's the offering at the Alley Theater for their Act Out series. It's her words, her story, her music. Next time on Queer Voices. Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
It's that time of year to plant trees in your area. So why not make it sweet? You can pick one out that's just right for your yard at the Urban Harvest Fruit Tree Sale. There will be a large selection of citrus, peaches, plums, apples, pears, figs, pomegranates, pecans, grapes, blackberries, blueberries, mangoes, starfruit, cherry of the Rio Grande, avocados, dragon fruit, and more. The sale will be held Saturday, January 19th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. with talks on varieties and care of the trees on the two Saturdays before the sale from 2 to 4 p.m. The sale and talks are located at Emerson Unitarian Church, 1900 Bering Drive, between Westheimer and San Felipe, just outside the West Loop. Come early for the best selection and bring a wagon if you can. The sale site has a lot of on-site parking, with additional parking in neighborhood lots. For detailed information on prices, care, and directions, check the Urban Harvest website at www.urbanharvest.org. You're listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
The Youth Radio Show is looking for young, dedicated volunteers to help produce weekly segments which will then air on the show Saturday nights at 9 p.m. As a Youth Radio volunteer, you'll receive free training in sound engineering, interviewing techniques.
Do you think we should raise the driving age?
It'd be reasonable to keep it the same.
Live production skills and...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.